Hey folks, this is Mark with the Mark D Show, and we're definitely going to be having some fun here with some great conversation and things of that nature. So we're looking forward to having our guests join us very shortly. So hopefully they will be coming in the very near future. As a matter of fact, I see we've got one of them on the line with us right now, that being Jan Cromartie. So very glad to have Jan joining us here on this particular show, and it should be a lively conversation, expecting that we may have some other guests joining us also. So definitely going to enjoy some lively conversation, see what kind of things are going to be happening on this particular show. We are definitely excited about being here on this show and looking forward to some great conversations that will be had on a regular basis. So definitely looking forward to that. Hope that many of you will be looking forward to having the conversation with us on this regular basis. So definitely keep that in mind, and keep that in mind that we're going to be doing this show on a continual basis. Every week we'll be having some great music coming your way, and as well as some great conversations. So we'll be talking about music, we'll be talking about entertainment, we'll be talking about all kinds of things in our community. So we are definitely looking forward to that. And like I said, I am joined in the studio today by my man Jan Cromartie. Jan Cromartie is thinking about getting involved in politics, and you know, a lot of things have been happening in our society, and a lot of things are going on that people are paying constant attention to. We're looking at things that have been going on. I mean, a lot of folks were having the protests here in Durham. The Durham protests were very peaceful, so I was very proud of my city. They definitely came out in support of many of us brothers that are out there. We know that we're tired of what's going on with the abuse that is going on by the police and things of that nature. So that being said, I was glad that Durham was definitely letting folks know that they were in support of the people that are highly upset about what happened in the death of George Floyd. So we definitely understand that. We understand the outrage around the community and around the nation. And then, of course, throughout that outrage, there have been some cities that have actually had fires and looting. I know that in Raleigh, they brought out the National Guard, and other places they brought out things of that nature. So definitely, Durham was a very peaceful city in that regards. It was also great seeing a wide variety of people. It was definitely a youth-led protest from what I could see. And it was also a protest that was definitely multiracial, like I said, multi-ages, multi-orientations, just all kinds of things going on in that regard. So it was great seeing that kind of conversation happening, and that these folks were definitely involved and you know, letting folks know how they felt and everything. I am not a big fan of folks that want to have things going on in the sense of tearing up things and looting and things of that nature. But we do know that sometimes that will happen. You will have provocateurs and people like that will be out there causing trouble. But definitely overall things are going on. Of course, we are in the middle of the health crisis as well, the pandemic that we're here with. So that's going on. So we have the health pandemic, and also a lot of people are concerned about racial disparity. So a lot of things are going on here in the world. So that is one of the things that is happening. There's just so much happening here in the world. I know a lot of folks are definitely concerned about what is happening health-wise, and concerned about the fact that it is impacting our community and impacting our community very severely. So that is going on as well. So there's just a lot of things that are happening in our society, and a lot of things that we can reflect on. But right now, I've got my man Jan Cromartie in the studio with me. So I'm going to bring Jan on and see if he can lend some insight into what he's got going on. Jan, can you hear me?
Yes, I can. Can you hear me, Mark?
I do hear you. Hear you loud and clear. So, Jan, tell me some of your insights as to what's been going on. I was talking to our listeners, telling them some of my perspectives of what's happened. We do know Durham did have a protest on Saturday. I thought that it was handled quite well by the organizers of that. Raleigh did have some commotions and things that happened in the evening, and I understand that they're under curfew. So, what are some of
Okay, I want to thank you so very much, Mark, for having me here this afternoon. Certainly, there are many things that are going on, and I am so very proud of our Durhamites and Durham citizens that we had a peaceful protest. I was in attendance at that protest, taking a serious part in it. I was probably doing something I shouldn't be doing. I would do a little bit of campaigning as I am running also for Durham County Soil and Water Conservation here. But getting back to the protest, we did tremendous. I am so proud again of Durham having a peaceful protest, and hopefully that can continue and not spill over to be like Lutheran and Wake County. I don't want to attack how things were done there, but like again, I want to go back to how proud we are, and we did better than most counties across the state as far as keeping peace, being cooperative, exemplary behavior with getting our point across. So that was great. This system, a somatic racism, it's been going on, as you know, Mark, for 400 years. So I'm probably preaching to the choir, preaching to your listeners right now, that these are things that have been going on for 400 years during the civil rights time. And these officers, they're supposed to take these sensitivity classes, but those sensitivity classes, obviously, we've been redundant about that. These things are ingrained in them. This type of racism is ingrained and it's innate in them. And if there doesn't be some type of solution, there are going to be some serious issues, historical issues in this country.
Yeah, you're right. So right about that. Now, I've known you for a number of years, Jan. You've decided to run for political office. I've known you to be an activist in terms of the Democratic Party and things of that nature. Tell folks that are listening that may not know your history as to why you are so impassioned about Durham politics, why Durham means so much to you, and why you want to be having this title with the Soil Commission and everything. So definitely give people that are listening to us and watching us a little bit of a view of your life and what it's been about and how you got involved in politics. Because I don't even know, were you involved in politics when you were over there at Carolina, or is this something that you developed later on in life? So tell me a little bit about your involvement in politics. I've known you to be involved with the Durham Affairs and a number of other groups, but just share with folks how you got involved in politics and what the political landscape means to you.
Okay, first of all, I started in politics really back in 1985 or 86. That's when Mayor Harvey Gantt from Charlotte was running for the U.S. Senate seat against Jesse Helms. And I did a lot of canvassing, knocking on doors, phone banking for him during that period of time. But I think it may go back as far as when I was younger, when Jimmy Carter was getting into office, and I was staying at my grandmother's, and we were waiting for the results, actually, Mark, from the election. And I remember at that present time, I had a tremendous toothache land on her beautiful couch in my living room. And she gave me medication. And as soon as they had the results and Carter was victorious, believe it or not, I don't know if it was America, that toothache from the assignment went away. Until this day, I'm 59. I had never had that toothache again. And I don't know if that motivated me. There's a number of factors motivated me, and I got into politics, and I just have a passion for politics now. Got associated with the Durham Committee, a wonderful lady named Deborah Giles, and Commissioner Brenda Howerton kind of introduced me there. I worked for them in the polls. Heck, you're almost going to say I was their campaign manager, because I did the majority of the work. So I went from there. I used to work around Larry Hall, Representative Larry Hall, who's now a Democrat leader, former Democratic leader, and got in the Durham Committee on Affairs of Black People back in 2011. There, I think Reverend Philip R. Cousin was our chair at the time. Put my name in and submitted a resume and a letter about being the health chair for the Durham Committee. I ended up making the subcommittee vice chairman position for the Durham Committee. I eventually took over because a wonderful lady named Miss Wanda Waiters kind of got ill, and Reverend Cousins came out of nowhere and told me I had to take over. So I think I did pretty well, because if I didn't, I wouldn't have became chair the next time we had an election. And Larry Hall did my nominating speech, and I won that position. I had numerous health forums here. I recall you worked you still working over there at Hayti. I had a health forum over there. I spearheaded and organized that health forum. My vice chair, I had a wonderful vice chair, and Dr. Richard Watkins. There, I had the Deputy Secretary of Health and Human Services, Mark Benton, to speak about Medicaid. He shared things with his Medicaid, and I had a young lady, one of the assistant attorney generals, Jasmine McGee, to speak about the opioid epidemic. I also had a forum over in Lions Park where I had the state health director to speak about dealing with diabetes. That shows my passion. I've been working with veterans. Larry stated that I've helped veterans over a number of years here in Durham. I've supported CAM Incorporated. I raised funds for them during my health forum. I continue to raise funds for them with late representative, my wonderful friend, Marianne Black, who gave over $10,000 from a grant over at Duke, for a matter of fact, during my health forum. But she had given $10,000 before, but I brought it to her attention what I was doing. So my little 600 plus her 10,000 was 10,600. So I have a compassion for Durham. I love how learned how to love the Durham people. They're compassionate about their politics. They're compassionate about getting things done. We the bluest, I think, when it comes democratically, of all counties, in our opinion, in the state of all 100 counties in the state of North Carolina. So the reason I'm seeking soil and water position in conservation is because we need fresh water here, and we need good soil here. We need 70% of fresh water is used for agriculture in the world. I studied that, and we have a lot of agriculture here without farmers in the state of North Carolina. And also part of that is land and soil that we need. I have concerns about us having, if anyone had read, it's been in the news about gas pipelines that North Carolina Department of Transportation have gotten together and put up a proposal to run gas pipelines along an American trail. And they did it without informing Durham officials. But from my understanding, I talked with Senator McKissick this morning. He said those gas pipelines are not going to be as damaging as people think they are, because he said they do not rupture that quick. And also, from my understanding, I spoke with another politician that the NCDOT, they handled those rails. And as you know, that the American Trail runs through there, and that's where we do a lot of our recreation. People are property owners there and everything. So what was concerning me personally is that I was thinking something could happen to the citizens here, and it has happened before in history. But I got a letter this morning in the mail from Natural Gas Pipeline Safety, and they stated on this letter, according to federal statistics, natural gas pipelines are the safest and most environmentally friendly form of energy transportation that is used today. So that was encouraging. Actually, I got this letter an hour ago in the mail, Mark. So,
you know, you're definitely staying involved. There's no doubt about that. And it definitely sounds like you're very impassioned about running for this particular office and everything. I was just wondering, because you mentioned earlier your concerns about health and things of that nature, and I alluded to it earlier, how this pandemic is really hitting us and everything. And I know that's not directly related to soil and what you're running for, but I was just wondering some of your thoughts on what we're going through with the pandemic. And do you feel enough people are going around masking up and doing what they're supposed to do in our community in the sense of how we're handling this pandemic that we're in the middle of? So I was just wondering how you feel the whole thing is being handled nationally, statewide, and particularly locally. But I was just wondering if you can give some of your insight into how you feel we as an area are doing in addressing this global pandemic that we're in the middle of.
I want to see if I can use the right words to talk about my wonderful city and county of Durham is doing. I mean, we are doing super great about how we are dealing with this, but there is a whole lot of work ahead here in Durham. We must maintain that peace. We can initially be peaceful, but we can't be stagnant. We have to maintain the behavior because of the outrage of what's going on here with black men getting beat down. We may trying to be, seem like we might be extinct. So the attention is not just black protesters, white protesters, Asian Americans from all nationalities, not just in the United States. There are people in Sweden, Switzerland, Ireland. They having protests because they look up to America. And I saw this on TV about how they are reaching out and protesting. The only thing I don't appreciate, like, there's a way to protest and there's a wrong way to protest. You are protesting and politics, it's kind of tough, but people just outraged. It's been going on for, like I said, 400 years. So I think Durham, getting back to what you stated, I feel about how Durham's doing. On the federal level, I don't think they're doing, I do not think they're doing enough on federal level. And you know, it comes from our president in the White House that can't decipher anything and attacking, going to point the blame towards other folk instead of the blame towards who has caused this issue here in across the United States. Because people, more as you know, they have a certain way of thinking. I'll say that mainstream, I love everyone. I got plenty of white friends, Asian friends, associates I talk to every day. But unfortunately, in most white folk mind, is that innate racism that's ingrained in them. And I don't know how many sensitivity classes they have to take. They must have to take sensitivity classes for the whole 365 days for the year. In the next 10 years to understand that this is not going to be tolerated here in the United States.
Yeah, definitely not going to be tolerated. We've got to do a better job of that and everything. But I was just wondering, you talked about definitely the things that are going on with the police and things of that nature, but also just in terms of the coronavirus, do you think that we're doing a good job in our communities as well as throughout the state and throughout the nation in terms of tackling this very difficult health issue as well? Because I do know that while you're running for soil commission, that the health concerns have always been a passion of yours. Like you mentioned, you did run for that. You did help put together that conference at the Haytai Center, and you've done a number of other health related things when you had that position. So I was just wondering if you could tell me how you're feeling we're doing in the sense of taking care of ourselves on a health wise as well, not just the health of what's going on with the police, but also our physical health and the way that we're dealing with this very serious virus that is going around.
Oh, great, great. Durham citizens are doing a tremendous job. I like basically some of the things Mayor Sewer is doing down here in Durham. He's putting a stay in order. And he's making in effect, and he's doing different phases from what the governor is doing. And I think of all the, to be honest with you, of all the, I think I've heard, and correct me if I'm wrong, that as far as Durham is concerned, we're doing better than most of the counties in the state of North Carolina. And I got to attribute that to some things that Steve Shure is doing here. And I think I love what Governor Cooper is doing, because we maybe two or three out of three states in the country that are still going by phases. And he don't want to jeopardize lives here in the state of North Carolina. Most people about livelihood. They want to get out on the beach like you, Mark, and things like that. Get out on the beach, don't have on face masks, be in crowded areas, do not give as follow protocol 6 feet away from each other. That you got to have that PPE on, got to have that personal equipment, protective equipment on around here, and not go around here with these huckadory attitudes. So that concerns me. We got folk here in Durham like that, but we're doing pretty well compared to most other counties, in my opinion, from what I understand and what I've read in the media.
Yeah, definitely. It seems like we're doing a very good job. I have seen a number of people that are out and about that are not wearing the mask and the other things that they should be doing. But I would say the vast majority of the folks that I see are definitely taking this very seriously and are definitely concerned about their health and their well-being. So even the protests, I noticed that most of the protesters that were out there were wearing the mask. I mean, definitely it's hard to social distance when you've got hundreds, if not thousands of people around you. So it's definitely hard to social distance in that sense. Now, is this going to be your first time running for political office? And what are some of the things that you've learned from other political candidates? I know that you're friends with Larry Hall, you're friends with a number of others that have run for political office. So I just wanted to know what some of the things that you've learned in terms of politics and everything.
Well, I've learned from Larry. Larry's, I meant to say representative. I'm always calling Representative Larry Hall. He doesn't have so many titles. But he strategically get things done. When he got the Democratic seat here, you know, he had to go to upon the Senate to get that position. He could have retracted and still got, but he was had courage enough. I don't know if it's because he's a lieutenant commander in the Marines, but he has tough hide. He went there and he set in front of those GOP folk, and they loved what he had to say, so they decided that they wanted him to be the representative. So and get that position that he got with the military affairs position that he has right now. I think Larry's the Secretary of Military and Veterans Affairs, and he's doing a tremendous job there, from what I understand. I hadn't had time to keep up much with him because I go be busy one way, he be busy the other way. We play cat and mouse, but he's one of my best friends. So certain things that he instilled in me, and I see how he go about himself politically, as well as Commissioner Brenda Howerton, who's trying to be on a lot of heat, and she does a lot of great things here in the state of, in the county of Durham, against some serious odds. And I don't want to speak on the odds that she deal with. We all know what they are, especially folk that should know in the black community. So I got a lot of my political sense from her. Reverend Philip, our cousin, who's no longer here, he was a person that always weren't right about speaking his mind, but he speak his mind, he made his point. So that was just some of the few of the people. Also, I wanted to put in there Miss Minnie Foyt, who was my English teacher in 1985. She always encouraged me to focus on my political and social work and don't allow myself to get distracted by other things. So I'm thankful for having those folks in my life politically.
And they look like they're doing a great job and definitely keeping you very engaged and very involved and things of that nature. So that's a great thing that they are keeping you involved and all of that. So we're glad to see that they are having you involved in all of the things that you have going on. So that's a powerful statement that you made about some of the folks that are involved in your life. Now, one of the things that we know that Durham has, and not just Durham, but other cities as well, is that there are a number of people that are in the area that get caught up in the political landscape. We have a number of very powerful, some that are newer than others, but historical political action committees and things of that nature. So as you're running, how are you going to navigate that kind of landscape? Because like I said, you have been involved with the Durham Affairs, but there is also the People's Alliance. There's some of the youth groups that are out there that have formed their own PACs and everything. So we know that Durham is a very political town, but it's also one that is kind of like run by some of these PACs and things of that nature, not so much in jobs like the Soil Commission. And one of the things I want to say is that a lot of times in politics, we forget that the local races and these state races and a lot of these things are the people that have a more direct impact on us than even the folks on the state and the national level on a lot of levels. So definitely I would think that Soil would be one of those, as well as some others. But just as you're running, how are you going to navigate that political landscape that exists?
I'll show you how to navigate it. I've been several years with the Durham Committee on the Affairs of Black People, but I'm not going to just be in the interest of just folks that the Durham Committee on the Affairs of Black People want me to do or be in their best interest. I'm all about all Black folks in Durham County. I'm not going to try to get caught up or be biased with any of these political action committees. I'm going to focus on the task at hand, and that is us having fresh water here. My folks not being polluted with any lead poisoning. I want to have good soil and land because, you know, that land is, we have, like I stated earlier, agriculture here. And we got to preserve for our future generations as well as the present generation we got. So the buck starts now with those things. And like I stated, I'm about all blacks and about all people of color. And I'm putting them initially, I'm going to try to work on their problems and strategically find a solution. And I want to empathize with them. I want them to share with me their disappointments and give me some ideas of what they looking for us to do, my colleagues and me, on the soil and water conservation.
Sounds amazing. And have you? When did you officially file, or when will the actual filing date be and everything? But I know you're very impassioned about it, but when will you actually be filing, or have you already made that filing happen already?
Well, I'm working hard trying to stay a step ahead of whoever my party that's running against me. I don't know who's out there. But hopefully people will support me. But official filing, I thought it actually started would be this Friday the 5th, but I've heard from another soil and water person that that would be the 8th. Because I'm looking forward to filing. My political slogan, Mark, is real problems equal reliability. I'm reliability. Reliability equals real solutions. I will find the real solutions. I don't care what I have to do, get experts. I work 24/7, and greatest thing people know about me, like Larry Hall said, and stated plenty of times, is my zeal. I have zeal, I have energy. I'm going to fight. I will fight for Durham. I've always fought for Durham since I've been here, and it's not going to stop. I'm like the energized bunny.
Definitely glad to hear that, and glad that you're running for this particular office. I think that you'll do a great job. We're actually also joined in the studio, and by the way, I need to give a shout out to some folks that are watching us live on Facebook as well as some of the other platforms. But I see that Renetta De La Torre has checked in and said hello, and then also Charlie Smith was actually watching from Sweden. He said, Black Lives Matter, love from Sweden. So like you said earlier, we are getting people that are recognizing from around the world. Now, I'm hoping that I'll be hearing from one of his producers as well, but we're joined by Damien, and Damien worked on a film that actually dealt with what you're talking about, because we're talking about issues of environment and things of that nature. And his film actually realized that there was an area in St. Louis where there were some serious experiments that were going on during that time that were not addressed, and that people did not actually understand what was happening and things of that nature. They were doing some serious experiments. Of course, we all know about the Tuskegee experiment and things of that nature, but a lot of people do not know necessarily about what happened with that experiment that went on. There was a subject of Damien's film. So Damien, I'm gonna try to pull up the clip from the film, but if you would tell a little bit about your filmmaking and your involvement. Like I said, I did know that I believe your producer is hanging out in the North Carolina area, and I did invite her as well, so she may be trying to pop in at some point or another, so we'll see if she actually shows up. But just tell us a little bit about the film.
Hey, thank you. Thank you very much. The film Target St. Louis Volume 1, it tells the story of post-World War II, during the Cold War era, the military conducted secret chemical testing on poor people of St. Louis. So if you remember as kids, you know, some of your listenership should remember as kids that, you know, there used to be these trucks that used to come down spraying for pesticides, you know, spraying for mosquitoes and things like that. In those cases, it's what we're speaking about in the documentary, they were spraying a zinc cadmium sulfide and phosphorus, white phosphorus, and, you know, what we see evidence of, radiation at the time. So, and this again was post-World War II, but it was going concurrent at the time of the Tuskegee experiments. So what was happening is that the government had two tests going at the same time on the most vulnerable communities of America. But you know, people know about the Tuskegee, but this is what was happening in St. Louis. And those those chemicals, at the time, cadmium was already known as a cancer-causing agent. So that was already known. And they were saying they were doing it under the guise of putting together a protective smoke screen, unless, you know, someone come over and try to drop bombs on an American city. But in all actuality, they were putting together an offensive weapon to attack Moscow if need be. So they used the St. Louis as their testing ground.
Wow. And we know that environmental racism is not anything new. Actually, North Carolina was actually the target of a major industrial dump where they dumped chemicals around rural North Carolina in the area that I lived in, Warrenton, in the 80s. And it was a chemical that they dumped all up and down around North Carolina and Virginia. People are still dealing with those health consequences. And that was in, I believe, the 70s, late 70s, early 80s that particular case kind of happened, and that kind of birthed the environmental justice movement that is very big around the world and everything. I did check in earlier with Jan Cromartie, who's running for office here in Durham, but I did want you to also say where you're calling from and everything, and also let folks know how you're doing, both in the sense of the pandemic, but also in the sense of what I consider a second pandemic, because I think we're in the middle of two pandemics, a health pandemic and a racial pandemic. So definitely I wanted to know if you could check in as well and just let folks know where you are and how your part of the world is dealing with what's going on.
Thank you. So checking in. I am currently in Los Angeles, California. I am in the Hollywood area. And it's, you know, during the first pandemic, the corona, it was locked down and, you know, the entertainment industry, everything is shut down. So, you know, we can't really work. So that's that element. So you've broken a lot of things internally and building projects. And, you know, I use that time as, you know, an additional time for me to break back open a documentary and go into it and keep some fine tuning. And then we had got some more evidence and documents there from the lawyer who handled the class action lawsuit that was surrounding this. He was able to send us over some new documents that we didn't have at first. So we were able to go back into the documentary and implement those type of things. Since we have this time, we have partnered with the Historical Society of Missouri, and we are planning to have our screening March 22nd. But, you know, this would happen. So we got pushed to like June 14th. And then we just had a conversation that date might even change. So, you know, that's how we're dealing with it at home, you know, building, creating and trying to stay active and, you know, stay track of each day, you know, because I'm losing track of days on certain elements. So that's the first pandemic. So, but now recent, this new pandemic, which is not new, really, just be honest, it's not new at all. This has been going on for so long. I've been protesting for a long time. I've been engaged in political. I've been politically engaged for a long time. I worked for a super PAC that helped get Obama elected the second term. I toured around the United States. So I'm just saying my level of engagement within the community and politically is active, right? So when I go to protest, I go to, you know, there's some protests turn to riots, unfortunately, that we have to navigate from, things like that. So I'm just saying I'm very seasoned. I mean, I've been marching for Amadou Diallo in Philly. That's how seasoned I am, right? I have never seen anything that I saw on Saturday when I was out protesting for what's happening. I had never seen this in my life. So
Damien, that you saw what was different? Because like I said, I've also been involved in protests, but I was just wondering, one of the things that I noticed that was different was, because we know that the looting does happen. It's happening before. It happened with the Watts riot. It happened with the Rodney King riots. It happened with a number of riots. So we know that there's sometimes an element of people that are going to be destructive. And I would argue that they're on both sides. They're on both the left and the right side. I have some friends that are anarchists. So I know what their agenda is. I know why they're out there. I know that we have to kind of marshal them and keep an eye on them, because you have to be aware of who they are and just try to make sure that they don't get carried out of hand. But one of the things that I did notice that I saw different, and I unfortunately did not make it out to the one in Durham. A friend, Jan, was out there, and my good friend, Zach, was out there, and I was monitoring and keeping tune of what was going on situationally. I just had some other meetings and stuff, you know, life does go on. So I had some other things that did not allow me to get out there, unfortunately, but I was following what was happening. And what I saw was a greater age leadership. I mean, and by that, I mean, I saw younger people. And yeah, we know that sometimes young people will take more of a leadership role, but this one seemed to have been youth-led. And by youth-led, yeah. I'm thinking people like in their 20s, maybe early 30s, but definitely youth-led, and even some of the seasoned veterans. And I'm in my late 50s and everything, but I know some of the seasoned veterans here that are in their 30s and 40s. And I was talking to my dad, who was a civil rights person. And even he was saying that it seems like there's a new generation is coming out. And one of the things that they've done is it seems to be a broader coalition. I mean, I think I saw, and Jan alluded to this earlier, I saw more Latin Americans, Asians, well, maybe less of the Latin Americans, because they got their own concerns with ISIS and things of that nature. But definitely a broader coalition across ages, across races and classes, and even among orientations and different other kind of ways that society tries to divide us. So we do know that, you know, the certain person that's sitting there in the White House, that orange person, that we might have to see that he is galvanizing a certain people, but I'm thinking that he might be galvanizing some of the progressive elements as well. So you're over there in Los Angeles. Did you see something similar there, or what was the thing that you noticed that was different? I guess is what I'm really asking.
You know, I can mirror that experience. It was a very multicultural protest. And I'm speaking about just the protest element, right? It was a very multicultural protest. I seen that it was definitely youth driven, but the cultures and the tactics were still the same, you know, when it comes to, like, you know, the chants, the civil disobedience, but still peaceful civil disobedience. It was, you know, at the most extremes was walking in the streets. And when we stopped people from tagging and doing things that could have, that would inflame the police and things like that, or make this situation something that it doesn't have to go. We was stopping them actively, right? But I'm the thing that brought me pause, because I just had never, this was just so new to me. I was walking down, we were on Fort Fairfax. I'm on a bicycle though, so I'm on my bicycle, and I'm going up, and I'm going from the front and from the front to the end of the march on my bike, you know, riding back and forth. So we're at the front of the march. We're returning on Fairfax, where the first cop car was set on fire and all this stuff, right? So we're walking up there now. There, everyone's turning to go back down, I'm assuming. And it was, you know, very peaceful, very, you know, everyone was chanting. They were taking pictures. It was a very healthy experience, you know, that was going on. And then I have to say, if I wasn't there, I would be skeptical of it. But what I saw, then out of nowhere, a police car came edging down the street on fire, with smoke coming from the inside of the car, with graffiti on the side of the police car. And I'm looking at so in situations like that, get to that degree where it's a cop car on fire, there's an escalation. You know what I'm saying? There you see that some people are acting up, some people are screaming, some people are vandalizing windows, they're breaking things, they're profanity. The tension level is raised, everything is heightened. That's what you see when it gets to the point where you can vandalize a cop car and do something to the point of setting it on fire and doing graffiti on it. So, I mean, you had time, you were motivated, you had all that type of stuff, right? None of that.
Yeah, and I sometimes wonder also about some of the things that are targeted. I mean, I definitely get when we're upset at what the police have done, targeting the police vehicles and things of that nature. I mean, I'm not a big fan of vandalism and tearing up of properties and things of that nature at all. But at the same time, I get to some degree those kind of things happening. But it's when you also are in the community and you're attacking your own. Like I said, I noticed that yesterday there was a gentleman that was in Raleigh and he owned a Black-owned business and his business was vandalized.
Yeah, no, I hear what you're saying. I'm sorry. I didn't mean to cut you off. That's not, I mean, I think my point might have been lost. It wasn't anything negative. It was all positive. So when that cop car came down, I didn't see anyone do anything to that cop. And I'm right there. Wow. You see what I'm saying? I don't want to say exactly what happened. What I think, but I'm just telling you the facts. I'm right there, and then I have nowhere to come. I'm at the beginning of the protest because it's going from one side to the other, and I'm riding a bike from this side to that side to the beginning, and there's nothing. There's nothing in that sense that's there yet. So for that to come, that's what incited everything to go, because people start running away from that. So then when you start running, you know, the fight or flight kicks in. You know, so you're gonna either gonna attack or you're gonna just, so you're running, and then you reposition yourself, and then it started escalating with violence, and then it got really weird for no reason. So I really don't know how that happened. I know that I've never seen anything like that, and I've never experienced anything like that. And I've been around a lot of protests and march, and that seemed very, very weird and odd.
It's almost like in some cases, some of these things may even be, I hate to put it this way, but I'm just going to put it out there and put it bluntly. Some of these things may be planned by certain forces that are trying to disrupt the protests.
All evidence lead to that. I mean, I welcome someone to show me a video of that person attacking that cop car and setting it on fire and spray paint, that particular one. If someone comes up with a video and show, hey, man, see, you missed this, I'd be like, wow, that blew my mind. I don't know how I missed it, but I'll accept it. But until I see that, I'm just going to tell you what I saw. And I'm pretty, it just tripped me out, man. It did really trip me out. That seemed very, very intentional and out of the ordinary for the tone of the protests that was happening. But I do know that you also need things like that to escalate a situation so for certain tactics to be enforced. I do know you need provocation. I do know that. You see what I'm saying? So it's a strange time.
Yeah, definitely. You need those kind of provocations and you need things like that. And I mean, I've actually sometimes even, and we know historically this happened, but sometimes if you bring the National Guard, and we had the National Guard come to at least two of our cities here in North Carolina, that also will intensify matters because, I mean, they're going to come with a different kind of vehicle and things of that nature. Mm-hmm. One of the most positive things I saw, and I forgot who sent it to me, it was sent to me by a friend or an acquaintance through, I think, YouTube or Facebook, mm-hmm. was a thing that I saw that was actually the opposite of that, which was very powerful. And it was the opposite of that, which was that the protest, I want to say it was in Miami, and literally the police took the knee. They basically like kneeled down to the protesters and were basically like, look, we respect what y'all are doing, and we're not going to do anything. So they basically did like a Colin Kaepernick kind of move of taking the knee.
How did that, I mean, I didn't see this. So how did that protest go?
From what I understand, that actually was one that was a little bit less violent, less of the things. And I think part of that was because of the way the police handle it. The police handled it by basically giving respect, saying that this is what we have going on and things of that nature. So definitely, I think it was a much better situation and all of that. So I definitely want to bring Jan back into the conversation as well. But I see that we're joined by your producer. And I'm going to try to see, and I'm Anki is usually my producer hanging out and helping me with these things. So I'm going to try to share the screen and see if we can't get the clip of the film up. We were talking about that earlier, but I'm going to see if we can't pull this off. So we'll see how good I get to be on Chrome tabs with pulling this off. So let's see if this actually works or not.
All right, we can do it. I believe in
it. You got faith in me?
I got faith in you.
Let's see if this works.
Won't he do it? I see Charlie Smith, Black Lives Matter from Sweden, is up there. It's dope.
Yep.
Sweet. And I lost you, Mark.
You lost me? Oh, okay. Hold on, Cromarty. We're going to continue the conversation with you, but I definitely want the video to keep playing, too.
Sure. How you holding up, man?
I'm well. How are you all?
Oh, it's fine.
Nice.
Greetings from the United States. Greetings to the West
Coast. Oh, greetings to the West Coast. Appreciate you. I can see your. I couldn't see your face down there. Charlie is covering you up.
Yeah, I'm Mr. Cromarty. I've been in the service for 6 years, and I'm a politician running for soil and water, bro. You all doing some great things over there on the West.
Oh, wow. Thank you, brother. Thank you very much.
All right. I think we pulled that off some kind of way, so I hope that they got a chance to see a little bit of what that was all about and everything. If you would tell folks, and I'm gonna bring him into the conversation. We were talking about St. Louis, and I definitely mentioned the environmental racism that exists throughout the country. And I actually need to turn that volume down a little bit. But that being said, tell us how you got involved in the project. We were talking to Damien, but I'd like to hear how you got involved in the project and also your assessments of St. Louis. And I tell Damien, I think that Bruce told me that you snuck into the North Carolina area. And, you know, you were doing this project between St. Louis and everything. But I think Bruce told me that you snuck into my home state.
Yeah, so I am originally from Durham, North Carolina. And with this, whole pandemic, I ended up coming back home and I'm with my parents. So I was like, let me come back here. But I lived in Los Angeles, California for the past 3 years. For the past 3 years. The timing is all over the place. And that's where I met Damien. We met through a film festival called ABFF, American Black Film Festival. And we just stayed connected. So through that, he was like, hey, you know, I see that you've been producing events. Would you like to, you know, be a part of my project? Because it is something that I was trying to get into film, TV and film producing. So I said, yeah, let's just jump right in. And I've been loving it ever since. I truly love documentaries. It's on its own. That's something that I definitely watch myself. So being a part of it, mostly in post-production, because I already came in after the film was already shot. Outside of a couple pieces that Damien did go to St. Louis to pick up, I worked on that production for that virtually. But I've just been, you know, all post-production editing sessions, making sure that we have different people, linking Damien with different people, making sure we have PR on the side. It's like every aspect of the post-production and social, that's what I've been doing. So it's been pretty good. I'm really enjoying it. I didn't know that much about St. Louis before I started. I've been to St. Louis, but it was only when I was young. So now I'm seeing this side and getting to know different people who are natives of St. Louis. It's been really cool. And Damien's a great person. It's like you would never even think he's from St. Well, he talks about St. Louis, but he's lived. I'll say, let me get that correct. He's lived in so many other places. It's just kind of like, you from St. Louis? I'm thinking he's from, you know, the East Coast like us, but he reps it hard. St. Louis Cardinals. I will not get off the phone without him talking about that. I'm truly there, and I can't wait to be able to go and visit again after all of this is over so we can have all of our film releases there. So I'm excited about that.
Yeah,
sounds amazing. Now, what is it about St. Louis that appealed to you, Damien? Because like I said, we know St. Louis has got a rich history in terms of civil disobedience. I mean, there were definitely some cases even before what went on with George Floyd that were St. Louis based and that were going around what was happening in that community and everything. So what particularly drew you to St. Louis and particularly the environmental side of what was happening in St. Louis? Because we know there's some other places even down around Mississippi that would have faced some environmental issues and things of that nature in our community. So what brought you to this story?
What brought me to the story is that me and my grandmother, we communicated before she passed recently. She used to mail me letters, and we used to sit and talk about the letters. Most of the letters were about family members, gossip, you know, talking about this, that, things or another. But and then there'd be news clippings sometimes. We'd talk about, you know, politics and stuff. And in this particular case, she sent me this news clipping of some testing that happened around this community that she grew up in. She felt like she had been a part of. I called her up, you know, we talked about it as we usually do. And then I started to do some more investigation into it. And I felt like it was really, It was horrendous what happened to us. And then not having any type of follow up or any type of, you know, acknowledgement of how you treated people. And so I decided to go into the documentary and I started investigating and start, you know, contacting survivors and start building a narrative around that. And we start, you know, telling the story. So that's how we came about. So it started with a survivor and that's how we came to it. My grandmother.
Yeah. And those grandmothers are oftentimes those survivors that we often know quite well. I know my grandmother, who was a librarian and started the Black Library in Raleigh, was definitely a survivor, as was my grandmother on the other side. So yes, on my mom's side. So grandparents are definitely very important in our lives. There's no doubt about that. But the one thing that I've got to ask you and everything is, one of the things that we know that is happening, even with the current pandemic, is there's a fear in our community about testing. Like I said, I just finished this whole thing with being trained as a contact tracer, which means being able to talk to people that have the coronavirus and then being able to talk to people that might have contacted them. And it was a training that John Hopkins was offering during one of their free courses. So many of our colleges are offering free courses. But that being said, we do know that part of what happens is that sometimes with what's going on in the world, that's one of the concerns that we have in our community, is some a fear that we may not go get the test because of what we knew happened historically. Mm-hmm. Is there any fear, and this is for both you, Emma, as well as you, Damien, that might cause a problem even in the showing of the film? Because yes, it's a very powerful story. It's a story that needs to be told. But at this particular time, I'm wondering, are there any concerns about how you're going to balance that? Balance telling the story and also people's fears about that history. Because that history leads people to have fears about the current testing and what the administration might be doing.
You know, that's a really good question. Really, really great question. And, you know, it's how I would unpack that. Telling this story about how you were tested upon, how you was tested on, there was no follow-up, how they disregarded your humanity. Because that's a through line that I try to address in all of my work, is the humanity in us. Because all of us, you know, are humane, but as they're not, we're not perceived that way. So we have to acknowledge something that was done to you first. So this is what this documentary represents, is an acknowledgement that this happened to you. You are not crazy. You are not, these are the rumors that you heard about are not just rumors or folk tales or allegories that we pass down to help protect us from everything that's been perpetrated against us for so long. No, this is true. This is a fact. So they need to acknowledge this, and then we can move on from there. And within the documentary, our elders and our survivors say, hey, you know what? Ain't nothing really going to change for me at this present moment, because I've lived my life in this, but I'm doing this for the next generation and future generation. So you don't have to put up with this. And so you can call attention to things like that. So that's, again, that's one of the issues that we want to make sure that we address in the documentary. Now, so to talk about, to it kind of been leading into that the story of how African Americans tend to fear to go to the doctors and the hospitals, that is a valid fear. So I want to make sure that is a very valid fear, and I understand. And documentaries like Target St. Louis Volume 1 is bringing to light what happened to you is real. So it's not just in your mind, like kind of racism. You can still be a racist, just call it and say it racist, so we can stop thinking that we crazy. You know, you ain't got to change your tactics, but at least acknowledge it. At least give us peace of mind, because peace of mind is priceless. So when you have peace of mind, you can move in different places. You can build foundations because you're at peace with this. So now you can act out accordingly, you know. So I think that's the first thing. And I think that's why we need documentaries and tell stories like this. These things happen to you, and we're going to acknowledge this, and then we're going to go from there. But first, we have to acknowledge that you did this to us.
Yeah, it's been even interesting watching the way that the protests are handled differently. Because, I mean, we've seen how the protests that were done by the open the states kind of protests were done. I mean, those folks were walking in with AK-47s and everything else, and walking in with all kinds of equipment, or even not even the protests, but the big gatherings. I mean, here in North Carolina, we had people going to NASCAR. I think this weekend they did a NASCAR race. I know last weekend definitely they did one, and it was not given the same kind of reaction as our protests were given, even though they were a lot more volatile in my sense of what they're bringing to the table of the activities. group than what we actually saw among our community. Like I said, our community I saw was a very diverse group and everything. And yeah, there might have been elements within that group, but I just thought it was really interesting the way that these two groups were treated totally differently within of a couple of weeks.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I'm sorry. I feel like I'm monopolizing. Someone else, please.
No. I totally agree. I think in terms of this documentary and COVID and what everything is happening, that this doc will show, you know what, these things have happened in our community before. So we need to make sure that we actually speak out, that they targeted St. Louis because it was a community that they didn't think people were going to talk about it. They didn't think people were going to say anything. And Damien is now saying stuff, who is the next generation under after all of it has happened. So we also look at COVID and the rates within the African-American community and with minorities, that it's rising in those rates. And the fact that we already have as a Black community different problems that will, you know, allow us to have COVID even more. I don't know if that was the right terms of that. It's just kind of like, we have to make sure that we're not, you know, just sitting back. We're not just allowing them to say, you know, we need to know where these testing centers are. We need to know, how can we be able to, you know, work from home at our place? How are we getting the stimulus check? How are we getting the things that we need? We need to make sure that as a community, we're speaking out, because as in Target St. Louis, they didn't speak out. They didn't say what was going on. They said what was going on when things and areas were being sprayed, but nobody went to anybody. Nobody said stop. Nobody said, what are we doing? So we need to make sure that now. What'd you say?
No, I'm saying, and you know, just to add into your point, and in St. Louis, they intentionally did not tell the population that they were doing this test. I mean, this is by their own documentation. This is not like me just making this up, or Emma just pulling this out of, you know, a press release somewhere else. No, this is their own documentation that said they intentionally didn't tell the people of St. Louis.
Yeah, so we definitely need to, as of now, as a people, need to make sure that we're, you know, speaking out and we're saying, hey, this doesn't look right. This doesn't seem right. Why don't we have testing centers here? Or why don't we make sure peacefully protest? Or why don't we make sure we're going out and vote? Like, we have to make sure that we say something before something like this ever happens again, you know?
Yeah, because like I was telling Damien earlier, it's happened before. I remember growing up in Warren County, where they dumped serious chemicals all up around Warren County and Southern Virginia. And that was done in like around the late 70s, early 80s, at the time that my folks had a community radio station it was on. So I remember them being at the forefront of this kind of like reporting about this. And like I still told him, that created what they now call the environmental justice movement, which is now getting ready to go on about 40 or 50 years. But it was that particular dump that created that movement. And I mean, there have been other environmental protests, but when we say environmental justice, it comes out of that rural area that was definitely a very minority area, predominantly African-American, a large Native American population as well, but definitely minority groups that were there. There might have been even a slightly growing Hispanic population at that time, but definitely that was a minority focused area. So it's just been amazing seeing that. And you both brought up the importance of elections. Like I said, I got my good friend Jan Cromarty running for a local soil commissioner office and everything. So it's very important that we have these kind of things happening where people are being realizing that it's important, even with what y'all are talking about. We need to have people, not just on the national level. Yeah, we need somebody to take out the orange man in terms of not having him in the White House for another 4 years. But we've also got to find ways to actually engage our local politics as well.
Yes. Mm-hmm. That's where it starts. A lot of people don't think like, oh, I just need to vote for the president. It's like, no, the reason why these riots are happening now, I know we're getting not even talking about Target anymore or TV or film, but it's like the reason why these riots are happening is because our locals aren't really for us, at least not all of them. It's like, we need to make sure that we're electing our, you know, North Carolina people, our, you know, Missouri people, our California people, to make sure that, you know, these things don't happen and we're all on the same accord. So when, you know, the U.S. government wants to come in and spray something and they start talking to our leaders of the city, they're going to be like, no, we're not going to do this to our people. So we need to definitely make sure that we get out and do the things we need to do. I know they have absentee ballots because of COVID-19 for people even in the state, so, or even in the city. So we definitely need to look into that as well.
Yeah, because I know that's one of the big conversations they're having is about voting by mail and things of that nature. They're definitely looking at that possibility. I'm actually a fan of that because I think that we need to find ways to have a greater democracy. But then again, I'm also a fan of us eventually getting a third party because I'm not too convinced that just Republicans and Democrats is enough. We might need some third party stuff going on.
Yeah, I'm with you on that.
Mark, I need a touch. I'm going to touch with you just a moment here. Excuse me, Damien and the lady.
Hi.
She was talking about how you doing this afternoon. Mr. Cormarty here, running for soil and water here in Durham, North Carolina. Absentee ballots start September the 9th. You were just mentioning that, so I want to inform you that that will take place on September the 9th. Think everything you possibly going through email now, and I want you guys to, whoever you may know, your colleagues and friends, hopefully they will put their support behind me. Like I said, soil and water, conservation here, got to have fresh water for agriculture, at least 70% of it in the world, and land, and got to prepare for, preserve for our future generations. And that's what I'm all about. My campaign logo is real problems equals reliability, which is me, equals real solutions. So keep me in mind, and I am not a crook now.
I love it. Yes.
All right.
Appreciate you there. And definitely running for that office and everything. But so you're open to that possibility too, because I'm a big fan of us getting rid of the Electoral College as well as possibly some third party candidates.
Yeah. Definitely appreciate the third party candidates. Man, I've been a registered independent since 2002. Yeah, so we definitely got to figure out your vote should matter, your votes should count for something, so you have to align with the people who are aligning with you.
I love my independence. Love my independence.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, gotta have that independent voice. That is very true. So, what message would y'all give about? Oh, that's the other thing I want to ask y'all, both of you, Emma, as well as you, Damien. We're hearing the conversations that the film industry won't open back up till the end of maybe the middle of next year. I started to say the end of this year, but I'm hearing talks of maybe even spring or summer of next year. What are you hearing in Los Angeles? What are you hearing in the documentary community? I mean, whenever we reopen, I'm actually on the board of the Carolina Theater. I know we're going to have to space 1,000 seat theater. That's the bigger theater. There's several smaller ones there, but we're going to have to space it out. So there's maybe, if we're lucky, a couple hundred people in there. We're going to do that 6 feet separation and everything. But just in terms of actually creating product, what are you hearing?
You know what, man? It's one of those situations that it's so uncertain. People, any policy or any plan someone put in place, everyone's going to shoot it and criticize it and shoot it full of holes. And then the next one is going to be presented. So I don't know. We really, really just don't know, in my opinion. I've heard that everyone's waiting to see what Tyler's going to be looking like. And he's saying he's planning on opening in July. Again, this is what happens when you're an owner. You know, you can do what you want when you want to do it. So if your state is allowing you to do it, you can do what you want. So Tyler said he's going back in production in July. So I think what the industry is doing is going to take a step back and see how it turns out with him and using I want you to see the parallels using him and his productions, those people of color, as a test pattern to see how it's going to work out. You know what I'm saying? So that parallels with Target very easily. But so that's what's happening. I know production is shut down. And because there's a lot of protocols being put in place, wearing masks, gloves. Some people, you know, they don't know if that's going to work. Then they want to see if you want to quarantine the actors for at least the actors and production for at least 2 weeks before we go into shooting. Then that costs a lot too, because it's per diem, that's contract. We don't even have the language to address this. And you know how important the language is when you're dealing with certain things for your lawyers and stuff like that. So that's how bad it is, and that's how much in flux it is out here, from my understanding. Everyone's trying to figure it out, but no one has a real, you know, plan of rollout yet. And there's a lot of wait and see, because no one wants to be liable. So that's the biggest thing. Yeah, I'm thinking, you know, July, August. But the ramifications and repercussions of this is just so crazy to me. Like the Emmys, Oscars, you know, all this is done. No celebrate, because all those are celebrations.
Right.
Yeah,
so everything is in a bad taste to celebrate right now.
It's just like, why? It's like, who knew that this was really going to happen and that it was going to be this impactful when it first started? People were like, oh, it's just going to be 2 weeks. You know, March, we'll be back open in April. And now it's June. And it's like, 2021 is what it's been looking like. But I've been fortunate to be on the back end and in front and behind of the camera. So I've been doing a little research. And like Damian has said, I'm Tyler Perry and his production. I know when it kind of first started in March, he actually had some of his people, they actually did do that quarantine and stayed on the actual his studio lot when it first happened. So that was something that I know a lot of people were like, oh, we're about to be here for like 2-3 weeks to finish filming out that. And then I have read a couple of things where I know with SAG, if people who are union, that they have to report if anybody has said, hey, you know, we want you to come on. It was an article that released, I want to say on Deadline, maybe about a week and a half ago that I had, you know, scrolled through. And it was like, if there's anything going on, you should report it so we can make sure that you're actually doing it. So it's really interesting to see there are people and, you know, the head people who are over the TV and film industry are having these meetings, but it's also like Damian just said, the ramifications, what is going to happen if you do let this set go on. We don't want to have, you know, the main actor getting sick. And then that's a whole nother lawsuit right there. So we have to figure out what is that, you know, that verbiage, what is it? I know I actually was on a very small set for a social media commercial. It was about 7 people. And it was like, you know, social distancing, you come with your hair and makeup ready, the camera to be here, you stay over there. I literally stayed in my section. I walked to my point of line. They told me what to do, and I went back to my corner. So it was very interesting. But that was something that I had to figure out. Am I going to actually do it? But we talked before. Everybody said that we're going to do this. They had masks, they had hand sanitizer, we had gloves. You know, it wasn't any crafty. You know, it was you come in at this time, you get out in 2 hours. So it was very interesting. But we'll see. Especially just how you said, I'm about, you know, the Carolina Theater. How are we going to do theater anymore? How is Broadway going to work? How is that going to work? People love that. And it's just kind of like, these are lives. This is the whole industry that people live on and thrive on, that you see, we're binge watching stuff. We're not going to have nothing else to binge watch.
Yeah, running out, right?
So it's really a conversation that is just like, wow, I'm not really sure what's going to happen, but we'll see.
Know the event side is going to be interesting. I know you've done some event management and event planning kind of stuff, and even that's going to be interesting. I've done that for decades and everything. I mean, most of the festivals here in Durham have been pretty much scratched for the 2020 year. There is no Eno, there is no Bembe, there is no Juneteenth. So a lot of those have been scratched. I mean, I expect the others will be scratched. I don't know that Centerfest is officially announced, but it's around the corner. It's in September. So I doubt very seriously that it will happen. So a lot of that is being turned out, and that's not going to be happening. So that's going to be really interesting. Now, a lot of what's happening is the kind of like virtual events. I know that I'm friends with Srinivasan, who's a New York digital innovator up there in New York City. He does these regular COVID talks and stuff like that. But he just did a major, I think, tens, if not hundreds of thousands of teachers, that was organized by some people in the Canada area and everything, the T4 conference, but it was strictly an online conference. I mean, everybody that was attending online. So I think that a number of these kind of conferences, and he had done some others that were like that. So I think we're going to see a lot of online kind of events, which doesn't quite have the same impact. I mean, like, I don't know that I'm a blues guy, and I've seen Buddy Guy live a couple of times. I've also seen a couple Al Jarreau when he was around live a couple of times. Even seen some of the hip hop artists, but seeing them live versus seeing them, on a computer screen does not have the same impact.
It's gonna be an interesting situation. I mean, that's a conversation that Emma and I gotta have soon about, you know, about the screening. About our either we wouldn't have our friends and family and crew screening because, you know, everyone that worked wanted it, people who want to check it out. And then we got to have our premieres, and those two screeners are in person, and actually you make a presentation at those screenings too. You know, this is your coming out party. You know, so yeah, you try to each screening I've ever had, I've tried to have, you know, food, catered, drinks, you know, presentation beforehand, usher into the evening, wrap out, you know, cocked, you know, something to elevate the experience, because we all know how important the experience is when you're viewing something. So now it's all new rules now. So I'm really trying to find a better way to engage and elevate an experience with people that might have to be online. So it's just a conversation. It's you know, no one wants it. I was on a set. I've been on a set that what she just described is that 6 feet away. Only thing we had was makeup, is because that makeup artist had some special effects that was needed. And those gloves, big shield, all that element. It was hair was come as you are, whatever the situation is. But yeah, it's a game changer, especially for this. But what it is going to do is lean it out, though. So when you start recognizing excess, that's what an independent filmmaker has an advantage. Mm-hmm. Because we're so used to moving in such lean spaces because our margins are so small on how we got to make sure this is most impactful for what we're doing, is that we're in that mindset already. And it's, you know, but a lot of these bigger organizations and studios and stuff like that, they don't know what to do. So they're going to have to try to learn what we've already known for a while.
Agreed.
There might be some major shakeout that goes on, because I know even in the podcasting world, the guy that one of the main producers of this show in terms of the IBM TV network, he's always talked about the fact that there's so many podcasts out there and so many things. He has a thing called Podcasting Thursday, but he's talking about the fact that those of us that have done it 5 years, 10 years, we'll probably be in the game for a while, but a lot of other people will probably fall by the wayside. And we got the health issues and some of the other issues that we've been talking about happening that makes the falling happen even quicker. So I think we're even seeing that on the corporate level. So you're right. There might be even some less studios around and everything. I mean, we hope that the big boys stay, but some of them may not make it.
Hey, you know what? Hey, in turmoil and in times of uncertainty, you know, for the person, for the independent thinker and the independent filmmaker, I mean, that's an opportunity there. That's all I'm saying.
Agreed.
Yeah, definitely. Emma, from a PR standpoint, how has this whole thing changed your mindset just in terms of how you approach PR? Because, I mean, we're also seeing a lot of our press also falling by the wayside. The black press, some of them, like we just lost the Carolina Times right here in Durham in terms of the publisher passing away. I know there's some people that are trying to keep it alive or keep it rebirthed or something, but for now it's at a stagnant level or whatever. So
yeah, it's interesting. I do freelance PR with of course 4910 and Target St. Louis, and also do a couple other freelance projects as well. So with 49 has been interesting because a lot of our things are in person and it's screenings and hey, can we have Damien on this TV show, this network? So in terms of any of the writers getting their information or, you know, articles, that's great. You know, pitching all day long is awesome. But in terms of some of the other events that I've worked with in PR, it's just kind of like, okay, now we have to go on virtual. If everything we've done was meet and greets or listening parties or viewing parties, or we have a, you know, talk back. A lot of things have conferences. It's like, that's not going to happen anymore. So it's really trying to figure out like, okay, what are we going to do with this client? What are we going to do with this event? Now everything has to be virtual. And it's also about a money thing now. Everybody has to change their rates. We're not paying for a venue and a caterer and a, you know, and goodie bags. It's now, okay, how much can we pay for this speaker to sit in front of their camera and give their information? You know, we're not paying hair and makeup. We're not paying transportation. You know, it's just like, it's that info. And it's also, how are we able to make somebody pay to get on their computer to, you know, to have that same revenue? So it's been really interesting. I think in terms of pushing out content has been good. But when it comes to a lot of the, like you said, the publishing companies, it's just like, well, we can't be in the same room, you know, with our computers, or we have to now work from home. That's like the hard part, because it's really is a, I need to make sure I have this book, or I need to make sure I'm talking to my coworker to make sure this is the right information. It can be really hard with, you know, not having maybe the even right Wi-Fi. It's like, now we're at home. So it's really interesting. I'm definitely coming from the PR standpoint, but online, people who are journalists online or writers online, they're doing good, because now they have content as long as people are pushing. But in terms of events and actually saying, you know what, there was a school that shut down. And it's just kind of like you have to think about different things. Like there are companies and people who aren't able to survive because their thing was that physical printout. And now it's like, that's not going to happen because we can't have the people actually in the actual offices to make them happen. So it's really interesting.
Yeah. And even the education, as you just alluded to, that's totally changed because I've talked to several friends of mine that are professors on the university and college level, as well as some that are teachers on the grade school level. And they're all talking about how this is going to totally change things. I don't know whether either of you have kids or not, but they're talking about the kids may wind up having to go to school for half the time in the physical building, half the time off of the campus and doing it online. They're talking about different kinds of limitations on how many students can be in the classroom. And some of the students are already having a hard enough time staying engaged the old fashioned way. And now we're going to give them even greater opportunities to be unengaged.
Yeah, that whole, like I said, education, that's a whole nother topic. And I'm also passionate about that. I'll really hit on that because we also have to look at now, as a lot of children go to school for food, a lot of children go to school to get away from the craziness at home. And now we have at home problems even more because we're stuck at home and the children don't have that person who they can lean on, that counselor or that teacher or that best friend. So it's really interesting. And then like we already have overcrowding in a lot of our public schools and a lot of the public schools that are filled with Black people. We still have segregation in our schools, and a lot of people don't realize that for some reason. It's just like, no. So it's just kind of like, how can you go from a class of having, you know, maybe 50 people in one class to now it's only 5? It's like, where are the other 45 gonna go? You know, we have to now restructure our school system. And then you also have to think about kids who are at home. Do they have Wi-Fi? Do they even have a computer to do their homework? If you are a public school student, a young Black girl, some young Black girls in Durham don't have a computer. You know, it's like I have friends who grew up and it was like, hey, can I come to your house to do my homework? It's like, cool, yeah, you can come over. It's like that's a reality for a lot of people. So we really have to think about that. But yeah, okay, I'm done with that.
No, you're absolutely right. And that's something we've got to deal with. And a lot of that's very serious and something that we have to think about on a regular basis. We've actually got Gary to wind up the show and everything, but I've definitely enjoyed having both of you on along with my friend Jan Cromartie. But just a couple of things before we get off and everything, for those of folks that are listening that are thinking about getting into either film or PR, what advice would you give them? And also, I'm going to let you, it's a platform. It's my platform. So I will say, if you could give some advice to the Orange Man, what advice would you give him as we're dealing with these racial pandemics and the other pandemic, the health pandemic and things of that nature? So we'll start with the easier one, which is advice to our peers and everything. Then we'll go to the harder one.
Ladies first.
Yeah, I'll go first. So anybody who is, I would say, interested in PR or interested in, you know, producing or just getting their feet wet in either industry, it's more so reach out to people, send an email, research different companies, because people are looking for people who are able to work from home. People are looking for maybe an internship if you've never done it before. If you're a college student and you just graduated, or you're a high school student and you want to have it, people are looking for a little extra help. So I would definitely say contact people, research, do your research, and just contact your people, your friends. I'm all about networking across. Issa Rae had said it. It's like, you know, network with the people who are around you. You don't necessarily have to go for that higher celebrity. It's like, what is your friend doing? What is your sister's friend doing? What is maybe your old classmate doing? So I would definitely say contact different people. Yeah, that would be that. And we'll ask the second question.
go ahead.
For filmmakers, I think this is especially at this present time, this is the best time to just pull out those cameras and shoot something. Write a story. Like I did a movie and it's a movie named Second. I did it in 2 days. Yeah, was it 2 days? I shot it in 2 days, and that film did very well for me. And it's just because I had equipment, because I was working on another production and I had a whole bunch of equipment. So I was like, you know what? I wrote a movie one day, shot it the next day. So, and then we edited throughout the time, but we got it done and got it done. So use what you have at your disposal and make something happen. Create. If you're a creator, just create. Creative people create all the time. Keep on turning out. Keep on expressing yourself. Keep on being engaged. and don't become numb to the situation around you. Be a receptor, receive everything you can, and use that passion to funnel what you want to do and direct it in the right directions, telling your narrative and the stories that you feel need to be out there.
And what words of warnings or whatever would you give to the people on the up there in the White House and all that area, as well as just to the community at large?
Real quick, get out the way. Just get out the way. You're in the way. This is the, I'm telling you right now, this is part of the death rattle of racism. It's changing. Generations before us cared less, but behind us care less. Behind them even give care even less. So this is the establishment trying to hold on whatever, you know, the steering wheel that they can right now. Because they see it's a whole bunch more hands on that steering wheel, and there's a lot more colors. So they have a tactical advantage right now, and they're trying to use it, but it's bubbling through and it's streaming through. So if you just get out the way, you know, I think some of the biggest fear for the establishment is that people are going to do the same thing that you did to them. I think that's one of the biggest fears that you're fighting up against without addressing. You feel that we're going to do the same thing to you that you did to us. I think that's that's a motivating force.
It's interesting you said that, because I read this quote. I think it was on Twitter, and it was a young lady. She was actually a comedian that I met a Pakistani comedian friend of mine. But she was on her show, and then I've been following her tweets. And she was basically saying that she was concerned that she feared the riots and the protests that were going on, and it made her want to go out and buy a gun. So I agree with you that it might be that kind of like last vestige of what's going on. So they're seeing that they are about to be the minority population. When you look at all the minority population, all the quote unquote minority populations put together, that they're about to be the minority population. So there is a certain fear that they may be losing control.
Yeah.
And I think our policymakers and our government needs to listen to our healthcare workers. A lot of people are talking about money and dollars, and the healthcare workers are like, but lives are about to be lost. I really think they actually need to listen to each other and, you know, take what the healthcare workers are saying seriously, because, yeah, you might want to make millions of dollars, but you possibly will lose billions of dollars in the future. We might lose this earth for, you know, if it goes to that extreme. We need to think like that. And then our policymakers and our government needs to listen to the people. Needs to listen to our community leaders, needs to listen to those people who are willing to sit down at the table with them, who are following MLK. If they're on the MLK route and they want to talk to you, they need to listen, because we got a lot of Malcolm out here, and I have no problem with neither one of them. But if there are people who are willing to sit down and listen to government and listen to policymakers who are the leaders of the land, leaders of our people, they need to listen to them if they don't want this to continue. So that's what I would say, is to listen.
Definitely. Well, I appreciate having both of you, Emma, as well as Damien, on the show. I'm sure that Ankit and Kim, who are the folks that actually are some of the main folks behind this particular platform, would also say the same thing, as well as some of the other leadership, because we've actually got folks that listen throughout the world on this platform. Ankit, one of my producers, is actually out of India. Kim is actually just around the corner in Raleigh, but we've got some other folks in Australia and throughout the area. So we've definitely got folks that are listening on a worldwide platform here. So definitely appreciated you being on, just like I appreciated Jan Cromartie being on. And I have to have you come back on another Monday afternoon when y'all are able to come and talk about the different things that are going on in the world. But I definitely appreciate you being on here and everything. Just really quickly, if folks want to get in touch with you, give them your social handles real quickly. And also the same for you, Emma, as well. So as I'm thinking about that, if you want to give you the social handles, that would be greatly appreciated.
Emma? So I am at From Emma J on Instagram. Like, there's something From Emma J, at From Emma J.
And for all social media platforms, for me, it's Damien D. Smith, at Damien D. Smith. It's just the spelling of my first and last name and middle initial, D-A-M-I-N-D-S-M-I-T-H. And you can follow us. And also, you can follow us at 4910rosalie.com, www.4910rosalie.com. And what that is a portal where you can see all the projects that we have in development. We have Target St. Louis Volume 1. Also, we have the V, a.k.a. Victory High, a coming-of-age story, you know, set in St. Louis and high schools. We have several different projects and also our social activism projects, If I Should Die by the Hands of the Police. And we're actually going to repost our Mike Brown art exhibition that we did as well. So he's constantly been civil engaged. And one more thing, we partnered with an organization in New Orleans called Citizen She, and is in support of the Crown Act. So we are about to roll out our mini documentaries, mini short docs that we put out in support of the Crown Act, in partnership with Citizen She United.
Well, great thing, and I definitely appreciate the conversation and the show. Like I said, we're getting to wrap it up right now, but definitely thanks for being on and sharing all that great information, and do know that you're welcome to come back on any Monday that you're available, and of course, there's some other platforms that I've told you about as well, but whether it's this platform or some of my other platforms, you're always welcome to come back and share what you're doing.
Oh, thank you very much.
Thank you for having me. Thanks for having us.
Thank you for having us. No problem. Thank you.
Take it easy.
God bless.
All right. Well, that wraps up this particular edition of the radio show with Mark Lee. So definitely appreciate you and everything. So definitely, I think we had a very powerful conversation about a lot of things, everything from the pandemic on to race relations, on to health concerns, on to various other things that were going on in the world. I did see we had a few people that were listening and making comments. I did read some of those, but definitely do know that there are various platforms here on IBM TV that you can also be following us at the same time. So definitely do be looking at us on platforms like Facebook, of course, YouTube, and various other platforms. So definitely was a great show, and I definitely enjoyed having my guest. Once again, on this particular show, we had Jan Cromartie, a local political activist, as well as Damian Smith and Emma. Emma was involved with that production that was called Target St. Louis. So definitely appreciated them being on the show and everything of that nature. So a great show, I think, was had. And I definitely hope that many of you enjoyed the show and enjoyed what you learned here on this particular show and everything. I don't know if everybody caught the total amount of Target St. Louis. So that's actually how I'm going to go out. I'm going to let y'all hear it one more time, the clip about Target St. Louis, and then we're going to just wrap it up. So definitely hope everybody had a great time and learned a lot of information. Don't forget that this evening, you can also catch me on my other show, Straight Talk with Dean and Mark, and that'll be coming your way on Blog Talk Radio. But definitely keep that in mind, and then we'll be back here next week with another exciting show.
This is where most of the testing happened back in the 50s and 60s. People living at the complex.
This next story is so unbelievable, we didn't think it could possibly be true.
Our I team has learned the United States military conducted secret tests on thousands of people in St. Louis.
10,000 low-income people, and according to research that will go public today, this is where most of the testing happened back in the 50s and 60s. People living at the complex unknowingly inhaled this compound morning, noon, and night so the government could measure its effects on their lungs.
And it was for a purpose.
In 1953, Congress indemnified private contractors who were connected to human subject studies.
A black man from down south would only go to certain locations.
There was some strange going on.
We had no idea what it was other than the fact that we were told at some point in time that it was spraying for insects, mosquitoes, and things like that.
Got comes as a great shock to discover that Gary Cooper killing off the Indians when you were rooting for Gary Cooper, that the Indians were you.